Hey y'all, it's Vince Goodwill just hopping on here real quick before the start of this episode with some late breaking news. On Sunday afternoon, the Portland Trail Blazers traded Drew Holiday to the Boston Celtics. If you guys remember, Damian Lillard, that trade, Drew Holiday, this is the final piece of that three-team deal in a separate deal. So Boston acquires Drew Holiday. They trade Robert Williams III. They also trade Malcolm Brogdon, a 2024 first-round draft pick from the Golden State Warriors, and they get an unprotected pick from the Celtics, a first-rounder, in 2029. Who knows if Portland's going to keep Rob Williams III, but they're probably going to move on from Malcolm Brogdon, who had been shopped by the Celtics pretty much all summer as part of their Kristaps Porzingis deal. A few notes here. For one, the last time Drew Holiday and Damian Lillard met up in a playoff series, let's just say you'd want to see that matchup again to see if the same result yields, it's the same thing yields the same result. Let's just see if that happens, okay? Secondly, the Boston Celtics, it looks like they have completely loaded up for this season, because you got Drew Holiday with his money, Kristaps Porzingis with his deal. Both of those guys are expiring or pretty much can expire after this season. But also the health concerns. Kristaps Porzingis, a guy that can't stay healthy. Al Horford, a guy who can't stay healthy and is aging. Robert Williams III was also a guy who couldn't necessarily stay healthy. So you went from three health question mark rim protectors to now two. But in Drew Holiday, you have basically replaced Marcus Smart, who was dealt to Memphis earlier in the offseason. I think at first glance, you would think far and away, these two teams are the best in the Eastern Conference and maybe equal. Some people would say acquiring Drew Holiday, taking some ball handling responsibilities away from a guy like Jaylen Brown, who struggled in that category, that this sort of elevates Boston, maybe even over the Milwaukee Bucks, considering the last time these two teams played in the playoff series, Boston won after trailing 3-2. Either way, it's an arms race in the Eastern Conference. And you're looking at aging teams, even getting older. Usually it would see aging teams trying to get younger and trying to toe the line. Here, you have older teams getting older, taking on more health risks for the benefit of the short term. I actually like it. But I will also caution those, including myself, I will caution all of us who are very, very quick to say this is the definitive Eastern Conference Finals, because they don't have now. Neither team has the best coach, and neither team has maybe some of the continuity. Like, you're bringing in really, really big pieces and you're changing the fabric of your team. I would not count out the Miami Heat. I don't know what they're going to do as far as personnel changes. They wanted to get in the Drew Holiday business. We all know they thought that they were going to get Damian Lillard. They wound up with neither, and Joe Cronin, in a stroke of NBA pettiness that we normally hope to see on the floor, he decided in a stroke of great pettiness that I'm not going to help the Miami Heat. I'm going to help their two biggest rivals in the conference. I'm going to help the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm going to help the Boston Celtics. As we know, I think those three teams are the cream of the crop. I am not going to summarily dismiss the Miami Heat from the discussion. It is true that they look like they might be a step behind in terms of experience, in terms of top level basketball talent. But the last time we wrote off the Miami Heat, we spent May and June in Miami. There still could be moves made. I would love to know what Joel Embiid is thinking right now in Philadelphia, as media day will be upon us. Philadelphia has virtually done nothing, and they walk into camp with a disgruntled James Harden while watching every other team in the East get better and basically taking them further and further away from even reaching the conference finals, a feat they've never done in this era, in this post-process era. So while we think about Milwaukee and Boston, I would love to see Drew Holiday and Dame Lillard in a high-stakes playoff matchup. Their first regular season matchup, November 20th in Milwaukee, Drew Holiday returning back to the place that he thought he was going to finish his career. We can just leave all that there. Like, there's a bunch of subplots and juicy storylines here. You're going to hear a lot about that on today's episode. Due to my travel schedule, I had to record a little bit earlier. So some of the things that we talked about with Jrue Holiday will have already been dated. But either way, we think you guys will enjoy each facet of the good word with Goodwill. And with that, on to today's episode. Welcome to the Good Word, y'all. My name is Vincent Goodwill. I'm a senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network, where you will hear a bunch of podcasts as the NBA season is upon us. It feels like, don't it just feel like the NBA season just ended? It feels like a continuation of everything we just did. It doesn't feel like we had a vacation, because I didn't. I ain't got no stories to tell y'all. If y'all got stories, y'all tell me where y'all been so I can vicariously live through y'all, because Media Day is here. And by the time most of you are hearing this, I will be in Milwaukee for Media Day. For those of you who see me on YouTube, as you can see, I am in my usual background. But let's just assume. Let's just play a game and pretend. You guys can pretend that I am in Milwaukee. On the second half of this podcast, I'm going to bring on my fellow senior NBA writer, Jake Fisher. We're going to discuss a little project we put on called NBA Levels, where we basically put players into levels and not quite rank them, but you will get the picture. It's a really ambitious project that I feel like we put on, and hopefully it spurs a lot of discussion. Everybody had their own different thoughts and opinions on where players fit, and I'm really, really excited for you guys to see it, to hear it, and to discuss it. But the news of the day, the news du jour, of course, we are still in the afterglow of the Damian Lillard trade to the Milwaukee Bucks. And of course, Dame wanted to go to Miami. That didn't quite happen. And now he goes to play with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I remember hearing and listening to a lot of the criticisms of Dame when he first issued the trade request. And while everything was stalled and everybody was saying, well, why isn't this happening fast enough? And they were wondering, they were saying rather, Dame, you could have just waited for free agency. Why didn't you wait for your free agency to get your freedom and then you pick your place? Portland's under no obligation to trade you wherever you want to go. Their obligation is to pay you, and that's it. Start and finish there, which is subtly true. You know, it's theoretically true. But I want to bring something to you guys, because I don't think we've really thought about it in sum total because of the way that the NBA has developed over the past 4 or 5 years. But superstar free agency, I believe as we know it, is over. And it's for a number of reasons. Remember, for superstars in their prime that get and command max contracts and get every single dollar, we don't really see those anymore. We normally see the formula that Damian Lillard executed. Sign for money, get your way out. Or before, it would be get traded to your new place, get your bird rights, and then you sign for your supermax. But the CBA has disincentivized player movement as far as free agency, because they want players to stay in their hometown. They want players to stay in their home markets, while subtly also saying that they like player movement because they like the NBA being a 24/7, 365 league. Okay, we'll get to that a little bit later. But remember, it wasn't that long ago where LeBron James was in Ohio during his first stint, and you had teams coming to visit him and putting on their presentations. Remember all those presentations that the Clippers and Miami and the Knicks and the Nets and every team that had cap space that could fit LeBron into cap space decided to see if they could fit LeBron in? Because LeBron was an unrestricted free agent. We're not going to see that anymore. We're not going to see that no more. I'm just letting y'all know now. And here's the number. It's just going to be dollars and cents. The only player empowerment that I really think that you saw was the player empowerment of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis's player empowerment trumped Damian Lillard's player empowerment. Giannis had been playing footsies with the thought of free agency. Mind you, he's won a championship in Milwaukee. And they've built an arena, and they've done virtually, largely, most things that they could within reason to build a championship team around him. But he continues to put the pressure on. He was on a podcast. He talked to my friend Tanya from the New York Times, just playing footsies with the idea of free agency, just enough to get the Milwaukee Bucks on the phone and say, you know what? Let's go get Damian Lillard. Let's do everything we can, even more now, to create a super team, two almost legit superstars on one team. Some people can debate whether Dame is a first tier superstar or whatever it is. Okay, cool. But you have a top flight player who can take over games late, added to arguably the best player in the game. That makes the Milwaukee Bucks almost the prohibitive favorite to getting to the NBA Finals after being that going into the last playoff where they got knocked out in the first round in large part due to Giannis and his injury. Remember the discussion over the last couple of weeks before this trade when people were talking about Giannis, how Giannis would fit somewhere else. They weren't talking about Giannis in the vein of free agency. They were talking about Giannis in the vein of who would have the assets to trade for him if Giannis went to the Bucks. Remember, just dollars and cents. Giannis makes $45 million this year, 48, and then has a player option for 51.9, let's call it 52. You would have to be able to not necessarily match it dollar for dollar, but you were talking about teams within reason. Okay, could he fit with the Knicks? Could he fit with Toronto? Like, how would that fit? Because you know that Giannis could not actually fit into cap space. Remember, as function of the new CBA, teams have to spend 90% of their cap space by opening night. So that means this year, $123 million is the salary cap. That's not the cap and tax. That's not the aprons. That's just the basis of the salary cap, $123 million, which means by my calculations, by my rough draft, that's about $110 million that teams have to spend. So that means, yes, although you can go into a season with expiring contracts and you can clear your books the way that teams used to do it in the early 2000s, it's a lot harder to do now because the numbers are so great. Remember, a max salary in the 2010 year was maybe somewhere around like $17 million, somewhere around there. You know, and LeBron took less to go to Miami. He took less to play with Dwayne Wade. He took less to play with Chris Bosh. The best 4 years of basketball we've seen, arguably this side of Michael Jordan, was LeBron James in Miami on both ends as a two-way physical force, combined with his polish, his shooting, the winning, that was arguably the best level of basketball we've ever seen, right? The best level of basketball we've ever seen. And LeBron was not even playing on a max contract, which is why he hasn't played for anything less than a max contract since, which is, I completely applaud, right? Get all your money. Get all of your money. But Jermaine, to the point of this era, like, let's just say Giannis wanted to walk to Indiana. He says, you know what? I want to go and play for the Indiana Pacers when I exercise my free agent option. You know how hard it would be for the Indiana Pacers to conjure up $52 million in cap space when you've got to fill up 90% of the cap by opening night? That's a lot. So to me, that's why you're starting to see free agency look like this, look like Dame Lillard. And for those who say, well, you know what, Dame, if you wanted your free agency, you shouldn't have signed your deal. Well, let's just put this in dollars and cents for Damian Lillard. The 2-year, $120 million extension that he signed with Portland over a year ago, that doesn't kick in for another 2 years. He goes from making $48 million on the last year of the previous contract to making $58 million and then $63 million. That happens by virtue of him being able to sign with the team that he's played for and signing those consecutive max contracts, which are also tied to the cap, also tied to the raises because he continued to sign with his own team. I implore you all, the virtuous NBA fans or virtuous NBA media, to say, you know what? I'll turn down $10 extra million. Yeah, you be the fool, right? You be the fool. Because for every $1 million that you make or that you turn down, there's a billionaire behind the closed door that's making just as much as you. We just don't see him or hear him. And he's not out there performing for 82 nights or is supposed to perform for 82 nights, right? That's what I'm saying. And maybe Damian Lillard is an inflection point for all of this. And maybe he's just an outlier, too, because he had the years left on his contract. But if there was one player that most people thought wouldn't have been able to go from where he was to his desired destination, no matter what it looked like, it would have been Damian Lillard. Instead, it wasn't. And guys, I'll take you back a few more years when it was a lot more brazen, but Anthony Davis had a little more leverage because he had impending free agency. And he and his agent, Rich Paul, they came out in public and told everybody, look, I'm not going to resign. I want to be traded, and I want to be traded to the Los Angeles Lakers, right? And everybody knows the clutch thing, LeBron, AD, Rich Paul. Feel how you want to feel about it, but it was a strong arm move. And because Anthony Davis had a year left on his contract, that prevented other teams from really being able to get involved because they knew he was not going to resign, and they did not want to call his bluff. You didn't want to rent Anthony Davis for a few months and then all of a sudden have him walk to the Lakers or have some machination of the Lakers come in and take him away from you when that's exactly what he said that he was going to do from the beginning. And that's where player empowerment start to feel a little bit differently, right? Start to feel differently. Like absolutely anything going in any one direction or the other, it feels a bit squeamish. And I won't say player entitlement, but I will say a little bit of player empowerment. And here's the other thing. Let's get this out the way, y'all. Player empowerment is a myth. It is a goddamn myth, okay? Because think about Jrue Holiday, championship player, coveted by so many teams. Not quite a superstar, but he's been an all-star. He's been an all-NBA. He's arguably maybe the best defensive guard in the league, which still counts for a lot. And he was moved like cattle. He had no say. He said the day before, y'all, the day before he got moved, he said, I want to stay in Milwaukee for the rest of my career. He planted roots there. He had a connection not only with the franchise, but with the community there, with the fans, with his teammates. And he was shipped out the next day in a trade that all of us largely would make because we understand the business. We understand how it goes. When you can upgrade at the position, you do it. And who's thinking of Jrue Holiday right now? Player empowerment only exists for maybe three or four guys in the league. Doesn't really exist for the whole. It doesn't even exist for a second. It doesn't really exist for maybe a third tier NBA superstar. Does it exist if you're the 30 to 40 range of NBA players? I would say probably not. I would say probably not. I would say a team might look at you, wave their hands, and tell you to go back to work. We're paying you. Go back to work. This is where all of this gets murky. All of this gets a wee bit ugly, right? A little bit squeamish. Because the trust that this game has been built on, that the NBA has been built on, the game is something different than the NBA. The NBA is the league, is the institution. The trust that players have for institutions, the trust that institutions have for players, the trust that players and fans are supposed to have for each other, it doesn't exist as much anymore. It's been eroded. There used to be some level of acknowledgement that the game at least was supposed to be this overarching thing that we all at least agreed on, even if players moved around, even if teams did things that players didn't like, vice versa, including the fans, that the game was supposed to take center court, that everybody was supposed to leave the game in a better place in which they inherited it. And financially, you can say that that will happen, especially when you factor in everything that's going to come in the next couple of years, right? Do you guys know about the salary cap jump that's going to happen Remember the salary cap jump in 2016 when they were supposed to smooth it out? The players voted not to smooth it because they want to see the infusion of dollars right then. That infusion of money, combined with Stephen Curry playing on a below market contract because of his weak ankles, allowed Kevin Durant to walk to the Golden State Warriors on a max contract and created mass chaos. If you think that salary cap jump was something, baby, I got news for you. This new media rights deal is going to explode again. And then you have the possibility of adding more teams, which means more players, which means more money again into the coffers. You're going to have a streaming service. You're going to maybe get back into network TV in addition to the usual suspects. It's going to be more money to be spent. More money for the players to get, more money for the owners. And also that means salary cap numbers like Damian Lillard's from going from $58 to $63 million, it will be more of the norm. It will be more of the norm. And players are going to do everything they can to get their max. Get the money first, and then you worry about the rest later. That has been always been or recently been the tone of player movement. It's never been turned down the raises that you get from playing with, that you get contractually by signing with your old team. It is sign with your own team and then find a way to muscle yourself out. Very rarely in some cases do you see things, you know, Paul George re-signing with Oklahoma City and then being traded to the Clippers. That sort of situation. But those situations don't happen too often. It seems like the mode has been more or less, if you are a player of substance, the equity you have with your franchise will allow you to be able to strong arm and make a move. And except in this case for Damian Lillard. And it goes back to the trust, because the trust had been eroded from Dame to Portland, to the Portland Trailblazer franchise, from the franchise to Dame. If you read Chris Haynes' story, our former colleague here at Yahoo Sports, detailing how Portland GM Joe Cronin didn't even talk to Dame when Dame showed up at the facility to work out when he thought a deal wasn't going to get done. Not even saying hello to him. That's where the trust had been so eroded. The people part of this business has been so eroded that people won't even say hello to each other. So then who's looking out for the greater good of the game? Remember, Adam Silver in the NBA had to create mechanisms with the Competition Committee and the Board of Governors this year to say players who are stars, whatever the designation of star is, they have to play on nationally televised games. They cannot be out, quote unquote, resting. Can you imagine, let that sink in. That's where things have gotten. That's where the state of affairs has gotten, where the trust has been so eroded that fans don't want to buy tickets or tune in when they are completely unaware of a player, of whether the star player that they're paying to go see, that they scheduled their day around to see on television, whether he's actually going to play that way. The trust has gotten so eroded. The trust is eroded from players to fans because we've seen the advent of social media, and we see what fans, some fans, a microcosm of them, think about players. And they take that and internalize that. And they see it and they say, why would I go out and perform for you when you think this about me? You think this about us. So everybody's weary. Everybody looks at each other with a side eye. It is not quite a toxic relationship, but it's a relationship now where there's not necessarily a whole lot of trust. And everybody's supposed to be committed to the growth of the game, even throughout competition, fierce competition. You want to win everything else. Everybody's supposed to be committed to the growth of the game. We've thought about that. We've mythologized the 1980s, the glory years of the NBA. Magic and Bird and Isaiah and Dr. J and Dominique and Mike and everybody else throughout the 80s, because it felt pure, because you could marry names and players that you saw come up for years with a jersey, with a city, with rivalries. There was a sweat equity that you put in with them that they put in with you, and you believed in everything that you were being sold and told. Think about how many people talk about the 1984 NBA Finals, Lakers and Celtics, the first real Magic and Bird tilt. You can have a million people tell you that they were there. A million people be able to cite chapter and verse all the things that have happened. We've had even a HBO show based loosely around Lakers and Celtics, right?
and we all dove into. We all love it. I can tell you that Bill Laimbeer barely breathed on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's goggles for that phantom foul in 1984. I can tell you that the Pistons, my bad boy Detroit Pistons, we were robbed. I say we, even though I was 3 years old at the time. That was the connection that players had to fans, that fans had to the story, that everybody had with each other, that everybody acknowledged that we all needed each other in some way. And now the money is so good. The money is great. And players should get every dollar they can. Get your money, right? The money is so good now, the players don't necessarily have to have a good relationship with the fans. They can be insulated from them, right? They can be insulated from them. And now also as a function of that, they see the money getting good. They know the media rights deals are coming. They know the salary cap is going to explode. So as function of the new CBAs or the recent CBAs, players want to stick around as long as possible to collect their biggest paydays. That's just how it goes. Now, you can take up a bigger chunk of the cap as old as you get. Even if you are no longer the best version of yourself, you're going to stick around and kick it and play, or at least show up in uniform to get that bigger chunk. And at some point, things have to pull back just a little bit. Players have to realize that they are a part of something bigger than themselves. It's also a shame that we have to tell teams to not treat players like cattle, to treat players like that they are partners in this, that this is a partnership, that this is something with sweat equity, with connectivity, with connective tissue, that you have to actually comport yourself like human beings, even though it's employees and employers, that you actually have to, you know, say hello to people when you come across them. It shouldn't be that damn hard. It shouldn't be, but it is. And everybody has a hand in this. All of it. It has gone so far to the extreme that whenever something happens, it winds up being applauded as some matter of virtue, when in reality, it's just business. Think about it. Think about it, y'all. The two faces of modern day NBA free agency, I would venture to say, LeBron James and Kevin Durant, right? I told y'all LeBron took a haircut to play in Miami. He ain't took a haircut since. And here's where maybe, and he's never been traded either. He's never had to ask for a trade. He's played his contracts out. Kevin Durant, even though the ledger will say traded from Golden State to Brooklyn and da da da, for all intents and purposes, he walked from Oklahoma City to Golden State. He walked from Golden State to Brooklyn. He was traded to Phoenix. He was traded to Phoenix, and it did get ugly. Got back right again, and then they quietly made things right and sent him to Phoenix last February. Everybody remembers. But those two guys are the faces of free agency, and it's only been like, let's just say, one awkward trade to hand between the two standard bearers of that. Now to LeBron, this may be where there's a little bit of wiggle room when I talk about superstar free agency. LeBron decided, you know, 4-year deal with the Lakers. Then he re-upped in 2020. Re-upped, added 2 years by virtue of early bird rights. Are players of today going to take that risk, knowing that they're not indestructible, knowing that you may not get but so many bites of the apple? Are players going to take less to survive the drama, to prevent the drama? Or will they look at this and say, that's a one-off and this is what we're going to do? Are you going to sign for your early bird rights? What will the new functions of all these, you know, CBAs, because this CBA will be up in 7 years. A lot of these players who are playing now will still be playing in 7 years. And we'll have to deal with the new functions and whatever the new climate of the NBA is. And when you talk about making the game and leaving the game in a much better place in which you found it, the responsibility of that is not just on the players, okay? The players inherited an NBA that was great and they're trying to make it greater. At the end of the day, we're all fans. I'm a basketball fan as much as I am a basketball writer. So I'm going to say this with no malice. I'm going to say this as a statement of fact. NBA players have come into a game and made it better, but they were standing on the shoulders of giants. So have NBA owners. Because the owners who helped build up the NBA in the 80s when, you know, David Stern was running it, Emperor Stern was running it, you know those owners? They're dead. Okay? These new owners have come in with equity that they didn't put in. They were rich and they put money, they made money. They are billionaires. They are wealthy human beings. But they didn't help build this NBA. So they can't sit on the ivory tower and wag their fingers about today's players and them not doing right either. This is a covenant and a responsibility on both sides. You know what else has, you know what else? You know what else too, y'all? This is the part that we ain't gonna like here. We got to make up our minds. Because when players sign those, you know, shorter deals and everything else, you know what that means? That means there's the threat of them going into free agency and there being more player movement and more trades and more bombs, right? More bombs. We always like the bombs. Do you want more bombs? Do you want stability? Because you want this 24/7 league that's always churning, always moving, but then you complain when things are not done fast enough for your team. Or a player who sees the NBA moving faster than ever, quicker than ever, sees his team not moving fast enough for his liking and says, you know what, get me out of here. Y'all taking me for granted. And then we, as a collective basketball public, we wag our fingers at them. We need to make up our minds on what we want and what we value, especially as it comes to trade requests, especially as it comes to things like that. It's just something for us to think about. But as you guys have been waiting for, I can't wait to bring on my man Jake Fisher to talk about our NBA levels. Welcome to Yahoo's NBA levels, where we rank the top 40 NBA players into four very distinct categories. I'm Vincent Goodwill here alongside the great Jake Fisher. Jake, we're going to start with level four. Players who do something really well, like not quite a specialist, but a little better than a specialist, but they could be a missing piece for a championship team, or they're already a missing piece for a contending team. There's 16 names on the list, so we're just going to go four by four as opposed to just reading them off. And then you just tell me what names jump out to you. We're going to start off with Domantas Sabonis, Tyrese Haliburton, Jrue Holiday, Pascal Siakam. Jake, anybody stand out to you there?
I think from the point of this exercise as to who could be traded and then help a team's title odds dramatically, we are recording this on Thursday, September 28th, the morning after Jrue Holiday was dealt to Portland. Who knows how long that will take, but regardless, for the sake of making this accurate and not needed to be re-recorded, there's going to be a wide market. There is a wide market developing for Jrue Holiday, much wider than what there was for Damian Lillard, not necessarily because of the talent or what have you, pretty clearly based off the feedback I got from people around the league yesterday, just based off the contract and his ability. The fact that he's on a one-year, $35 million deal before a player option that kicks in that he'll probably decline, that's the type of deal that, you know, Boston, Philly, Miami, the Clippers, Chicago, like any team, you can name a lot of teams that you could see convincing themselves, man, we're just one Jrue Holiday away.
Yeah.
Like the Bucks thought they were in 2020, just like the Suns thought they were with Chris Paul in 2020. And since that moment, I think that really changed the league. A lot of things changed the league, not like forever or just so dramatically, but if one deal kind of tweaks some semblance of the landscape and the marketplace, I take note of it. And I think because of that, because of those two deals, because of how wide open the title race is considered right now, a lot of these guys, Pascal Siakam with Atlanta, you know, if Bam Adebayo ever became available, I mean, Bam is that guy right now for Miami. He's their number two. He's their swing piece behind Jimmy. A lot of these guys, if they became available, a lot of teams trading for them would think, damn, we got a really good shot at winning this thing right now.
I think what a lot of times what happens when I was doing this exercise was, who's overqualified to be
in this spot or who's underqualified to be in a position that they're in. So you look at guys that you don't necessarily think of as winning players. So when I go to my next four, a couple of them will jump out to you as winning players and a couple of them might not. Brandon Ingram, Bradley Beal, James Harden, Draymond Green. Four disparate names, right? Because we think of Draymond Green as winner guy, right? He doesn't do it on the stat sheet, but he is the most irreplaceable piece on the Golden State Warriors this side of Stephen Curry. He does all the little things, the defensive stuff, the dribble handoffs. He's a connector. And usually guys in level four tend to be more low maintenance, low ego. That's not Draymond Green, right? But if you ask more teams across the league, would you take Draymond Green and become a better team? They would say yes. And if you ask teams, what's the player that you hate, but you would love to have on your team, you'd probably say a guy like Draymond Green. Now, with guys like Beal and Harden, those are guys who have been higher ranked players, but now have to settle into more supporting roles. Can they actually do that? Can Bradley Beal turn into a full-time point guard and be a third option in Phoenix? If he can't, that whole thing blows up. If he can, things get very interesting.
I do wonder, Brandon Ingram, that name you threw out there.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting year for the Pelicans. Zion is theoretically healthy, finally, once again.
Yeah, okay.
This team, when they all were kind of healthy and moving in the right direction, I think as late as January, they were the number one seed in the Western Conference. It might have been mid-December, but regardless,
It was December, yeah.
They had a pretty strong sample size where they were the kings of the West.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a glimpse of what that roster can, you know, maximize into being. But then again, as we've seen time and again, especially these last couple of years, these teams and these eons can change quickly. And if the Pelicans all of a sudden take a turn for the worst, I'm not saying I want that to happen. I'm not saying I think that's going to happen. I'm just throwing it out there. Brandon Ingram's already shown he can be an all-star caliber, 20-point-per-game scorer. Didn't have a super strong showing at the FIBA World Cup for a variety of reasons. But I think if his name ever hit the open market, he'd be the perfect type of guy that plenty of teams would look at as, man, he could maybe be our Chris Middleton to our Giannis. And, you know, does Mikal Bridges fit that mold for Brooklyn in the opposite effect? Do they already have that guy? Is he going to be the number two who's already building the culture, who can help attract the number one later down the road? So not all of these situations are exactly made equal.
No, none of them are made equal. Like, you don't think of a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr. in the same breath as DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine. You don't think of Jalen Brunson in the same mold as Lauri Markkanen. Maybe you think of him in the same mold as Trae Young. I've just named off the other guys on this list. And a guy that sticks out to me, another guy that sticks out to me, and I think he's a victim of first impressions, is a guy like Zach LaVine in Chicago, because he has a reputation of being maybe a chucker, a guy that doesn't play a lot of that can't play good defense or that doesn't play good defense. But you go look at how he played in the second half of that season with the Bulls after he got right following that knee surgery and his body got healthy. He was one of the most efficient guards in the league. And sometimes all it takes is not necessarily a change of scenery. All it takes is for your team to get better. And all of a sudden, you're a winner guy. Remember, you know, Jason Tatum, for a couple of years, it was, man, he can't be, you know, the best player on the team that really wins something. It turns out he probably is. I think, not to say that he and Zach LaVine are the same player, but I do think that winning cures a lot of ills. And I think sometimes, Jake, we look at guys, we pigeonhole them, and then we say we don't pay attention to them anymore. We forget that they exist. We recognize their numbers. We recognize their talent. We might even call them an all-star. But we don't say, hey, he can be a better player or a more efficient player or a winning player in a better situation where there's accountability and standards and coaching and all those other things. We just look at him and say, okay, he's just a numbers guy. And I think Zach LaVine is a guy who we might have pegged a little too early because his game keeps managing to grow and he's still very young. And I think that in the right situation, he could be a third piece on a contending championship level team.
Maybe we'll see that soon, being that
his
name's been out there on the trade market all summer long. And I would have to think if he were to get traded, if he ever were to get traded from Chicago, it would be to that exact type of situation you're talking about. If it's some type of thing where Tyler Hero goes to Chicago and Zach LaVine goes to Miami. If it's some type of thing, you know, in the past, Zach LaVine was one of the guys that Dallas was looking at to be the running mate for Luka Doncic. Now, that's not possible now with Kyrie Irving in the fold, but that's the type of deal that clearly for him, for a lot of these guys, you know, if Jaren Jackson Jr. were to ever get dealt from Memphis, I don't think that would be the case. He seems to be really embedded as one of the central fabric pieces of that franchise, but he'll have a big extension available. Larry Markkanen will have a big extension available to him very soon. When contracts don't necessarily go super seamlessly between the two sides, just like we're seeing with Pascal, like I mentioned earlier, with Toronto, like we're seeing with OG Anunoby with Toronto, like we're even seeing with how, you know, Giannis's contract pressured Milwaukee into trading for Damian Lillard. Those types of things can ultimately push the needle, push the envelope, and make something happen. Any of these guys, they're all all-star caliber or multi-all-star guys who, if they were to change sceneries, even someone like Domantas Sabonis, where I don't think, to your point, I think you said at the top, I don't think he fits in everywhere, right?
Right, right.
But when Sacramento trades Tyrese Haliburton for him, when they wave goodbye to a potential decade of an all-star caliber point guard, to bring in a multi-time all-star big man to pair with De'Aaron Fox, they're doing that because they pinpointed Sabonis as the guy to pair with the guy that they determine is their guy, and they become the third seed in the West. They have home court advantage in the playoffs after not making the playoffs for 16 years. That right there is kind of the ideal outcome if you are acquiring someone at this level four tier.
And it's funny because we said at the very top that, or we're going to say this at the very top, that some guys at level four yearn to be level one guys or have been level one guys. And some of these guys are content being the missing piece and they've played into their roles and they've embraced their roles, right? That brings me to a guy that I find really interesting on this list because I had him ranked higher, James Harden. And he's got all this consternation with his current franchise, the Philadelphia 76ers. He said, you know, issues with the Rockets, issues with Brooklyn. And you wonder if in a high leverage playoff situation, Jake, if he can rev it up, can he give you a game? He's shown you that he can give you a game. I think that's the difference between a level four and a level three or level two guy is that if a level four guy gives you a playoff game and you win that game, you feel like you've gotten gravy. Like you feel like you've stolen one in a place where you probably shouldn't have stolen one. James Harden can be that guy. Can he embrace being the third best player on a potential championship team? Will that be enough for him? If that's the case with the Clippers, okay, cool. If you got Paul George and you've got Kawhi Leonard and then James Harden is your third guy, that Pac-Man eat up all the minutes and everything else, that makes sense. But in Philadelphia, it feels like he's overqualified at this stage of his career to be a number two guy. But once again, because of the failures, because of the track record, because of the Carfax, we don't even think of James Harden. Probably if you were to think of level four guys, you probably wouldn't even put him there because of the stink that's on him. But I think that's perfectly where he fits.
James Harden certainly thinks he's a little bit overqualified for that role. He mentioned sacrifice and how much he put the team ahead of his own game time and time again. So he would agree with you. I think the Clippers, at least throughout this offseason, we'll see how it all finishes up, see how it all unfolds. The Clippers surely have looked at him as someone who could be that missing piece for them. Much different situation than Philadelphia, obviously, with two primary wing scorers instead of a 7'2" MVP who needs the ball in very particular places. But James Harden also has a hell of a lot to prove this season, because no matter where he plays, because he turned down a 4-year, $200 million extension from Brooklyn, because he turned down the opportunity. I mean, if he opted out of this contract, he would be on a deal that had more years and more money on it, without a doubt. I don't know where exactly it would have come from. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would have resulted in a sign-and-trade. I think Philly probably would have been able to give him something in the 2 years, $80 million range that we, I think, you know, $40 million. I think that's something that we'd be accustomed to seeing someone like James Harden making. But now he's on this final year of his deal, and he needs to showcase that he is the guy you're talking about, Vinny. He needs to showcase that in order to reach free agency next summer and get the type of bag that he turned down, and that's eluded him ever since. So this is a full 82-game slate and a potential playoff run for him to put it on the table and prove he is exactly what you are saying he is.
I just think he's really interesting. Like I said, I'll put him, I think, at a level three. I'm going to pull my list up right now.
I had him at level three as well.
Yeah, I had him at level three. Full. Don't forget, guys, full levels for everything. Like, this was compiled by our entire Yahoo Sports NBA staff, not just the writers. It was everybody that was included in this. And
a couple people I'm looking have votes on here where I don't know their credentials. I don't know if they should have been allowed to vote. No, I'm just kidding.
You, Jake, why are you starting?
That's what I'm here for.
Clearly. But I think I had more guys at level three than I did at level four. Like, level four was a little more exclusive. I had some guys at level four that I was like, man, I feel like I had to put them somewhere. And some people put them nowhere. And then there's guys that I ranked a lot higher, a little bit higher, that I'm not sure how high as players, you know, I am on them. And that's a guy like Trae Young. Trae Young led the league in total scoring, total assists last year. Of course, I'm not even sure if he made the All-Star team last year. Didn't make an All-NBA. And he's a polarizing player because of the way that he plays, because you don't think of him as necessarily efficient because of his defensive deficiencies and his style of play. What do you make of a guy like Trae Young? Do you think that the way that he plays, A, can translate to winning basketball? Do you think that his way of play can translate to fitting on another team if he were to ever be traded from Atlanta, where everything is sort of, you know, built around him and he'd have to go and assimilate himself somewhere? Or is he just a player where, similar to Allen Iverson, where all the pieces around him have to be absolutely perfect for you to even have a chance? Because if one thing is off, the whole house of cards is going to come falling down. Like, no disrespect to his talent. This is not about a talent. This is about how do you build a team around him and where he fits there. How do you see a guy like Trae Young, who, of course, we all respect, is immensely talented?
Immensely talented. One of the better pick-and-roll playmakers that the league has. And he's clearly an offense unto himself.
Yes.
The defensive issues you talked about are the big bugaboo here. That being said, the way that they can, you know, really tap into his upside and really maximize his current Atlanta Hawks build with Quinn Snyder now in the fold, you know, from that brain trust with Landry Fields and Kyle Korver, and you go down the list. The Allen Iverson comparison is interesting that you gave. I think it's a little bit less tailor-made for Trae, but at this point, he is sitting right on the precipice, straddling that line between being that dude or being a dude that some team is trading for to pair with their guy who is that dude. So this is kind of a make or break situation, just similar to Harden, but not in the exact same vein because he's way younger. He does have the keys to the car right now. And there's probably a couple more laps before he's going to either have them taken out of his hands and he's going to be put shotgun, or he's going to be filling up that tank and continuing to go. So I am bullish that it's possible because they've already made it a conference finals run. Sure, a lot of things broke their way. Ben Simmons had a giant mm-hmm. mental collapse that has since kept him out of the league for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, a conference finals run, I never say is a fluke. You got to win a lot of games in a lot of pressure situations. They won game 7 on the road in Philadelphia as part of that. I'd also say that they've done what they can to really maximize him with a defensive backcourt partner in DeJounte Murray. They've got plenty of depth. They've got a lot of intriguing pieces with draft capital. The Hawks are in a really intriguing position to both be good with this team. Bogdan Bogdanovic was arguably the best player in all of the FIBA World Cup in Manila without Nikola Jokic playing for Serbia. He looks healthy for the first time in a while. And they've got maneuverability to really take this thing and make it something that could be lasting. So the jury is definitely still out, but you asked for my opinion, and I do think it's possible. And I am expecting this time next year, we are talking about Trae Young having finally really secured his, you know, mantle place as the standard bearer of the Hawks franchise.
I have an idea. I have a take. Producer John, give me that 76ers bed. Give me that 10-9-8 76ers. Because I think in a perfect world, he could be the perfect shotgun to Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid is the reigning MVP. And I didn't put him at a level one. I had no qualms about not putting him as a level one player. Level one being the guy that you know can be the best player on the championship team. Like, he could be, but I got questions. A lot of things got to break right to be around for that to be the case. And for Joel Embiid, some of those playoff, I won't say meltdowns, but some of the playoff disappointments, including one to the Atlanta Hawks, where, you know, he had a bunch of turnovers in that game seven, and you talked about the Ben Simmons. He should have dunked, but he saw Trae Young coming around and thought Trae Young was going to hack him. Okay, whatever, right? But can you imagine Trae Young taking the big shots for Joel Embiid and handling late game situations? One thing you can say about Trae Young, he don't scare, right? Trey DeBarge does not scare. He is not, look, any man that can have that mustache and that hair, he is not worried about nothing nobody is saying, okay?
He's standing at midcourt of MSG taking a bow.
He is a heel. He is a villain. And I say that with all respect and affection. And there's probably no better team in the Eastern Conference that would embrace the heel out of all of the current contenders than the Philadelphia 76ers. And there's probably not a better team that needs a guy to take pressure off of their main guy, that takes pressure off of their MVP player, a perimeter guy who can do all of the things ball handling wise, all the things shooting wise, and who needs someone defensively on the back line to help him out, than the 76ers and Trae Young. That feels like a match that we need to see. I'm not saying that it should happen. I'm simply saying that if Trae Young were to get moved, there should be Daryl Morey with open arms doing the Chappelle show, the Rick James, give me the hug, come on inside the bosom of the Philadelphia arms here. That's an idea I literally just came up with because I was looking at my list and I'm like, where would he fit? He would fit there. But I got one more for you because you live in New York.
I do. Your favorite city.
Favorite city to visit. Actually, I love visiting New York, mind you. The guy who I think might perfectly fit this and is squarely in his prime, but might be a little overqualified, Mikal Bridges in Brooklyn. Because we saw him in Phoenix as that, you know, fourth option behind Chris Paul and Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, depending on whatever the day was. But he was sort of the glue, the connector to help those guys get to the finals in 21. Now he's in a spot where you're going to ask him to score 25 a night, but I think he's best used as a missing piece.
So you're saying trade Trae Young to Brooklyn to have him be the Batman to Mikal Bridges' Robin? That's what you're saying?
You are trying to get us aggregated, aren't you?
I'm asking what your idea is.
No, there's no idea. I'm merely saying that Mikal Bridges is the perfect definition of this type of player.
Yeah.
Squarely at this stage of his career, but he's not that player on his own team right now. But he's been that player.
He's been that player. He has plenty of opportunity to walk in the small sandbox that he now has at Barclays Center with all the lack of pressure and the lack of tabloids that I'm sure will not be there because the Nets never have any drama whatsoever.
Never. No, so here's what I'm going to do, Jake. You look at your list. You look at your level four. You tell me the name that you're surprised did not wind up on level four but is on your personal level four.
I'm throwing a name out.
Okay.
It's not a sexy name, depending on what your taste is. Kevon Looney is a winner. Kevon Looney is a winner. I think Kevon Looney wherever he would go, if you need a center, you stick that man in your starting front court. He is the definition of a level four kind of player. He's not the number two guy on a winning team, but he is a tide that raises all boats. He's done it in Golden State. He could do it elsewhere. Give that man his respect. There you go.
There are two names that stick out for me. One that I struggled with. One that I definitely struggled with, and clearly so did the staff, because he didn't wind up on any list, okay? Any level. One is Karl Anthony Towns.
Mm-hmm.
Immensely talented, immensely gifted. 7-footer that can shoot, that has a handle, that can stretch your defense and everything else. I don't know how good he would be if he's your best player, or we know how good he is, how good you are. If he is your best player, you're not going to go very far. And until Minnesota turns that team over to Anthony Edwards, they're probably not going to go anywhere. But if a team were to trade for Karl Towns and say, Karl, you're going to play closer to the basket. You're going to defend. You're going to rebound. And the shooting is the extra thing here. And you're going to assimilate yourself into what we do, into whatever our structure is. And he assimilates. Now we got something, right?
Make him Chris Bosh in Miami.
Oh, no, he'd never wind up there. And you know, you and I both know why, okay? And the second guy who I struggled with putting at a level three, because I'm predicting a huge, huge season for him. Evan Mobley, Cleveland Cavaliers. In this current iteration, they will not fulfill their potential until he turns into what I think he will be, baby Tim Duncan. I think he's the bait. I think when people think of Tim Duncan coming into the league averaging 22 and 12, which he did as a rookie, that was after 4 years of college. Evan Mobley, if he were to follow that trajectory, would be in his senior year of college, except now he's going into year three with all of this experience now, all of this NBA tread in a good way on his tires. And I think there's still so much more room to grow. And I think if Cleveland is to ever do anything with the current iteration, if Donovan Mitchell stays or goes, it's going to have to be a guy like Evan Mobley saying, hey, y'all, this is mine. Jump on my back. And I think he has that type of talent. I thought he was going to make a huge leap this year. But I just said, oh, you know what? I'll just stick him at level four. I'm going to be safe.
He is the missing piece. Evan Mobley needs to reach the potential that you and many other media people have anointed him to have.
Oh, that he sounds like you're saying that with a little bit of derisiveness, Jake Fisher.
I said this to Cavs people this summer, and they've said they've agreed. They need him to actually actualize that potential, or else he will only ever be that, and he will fall on the long list of players who had the potential that never got it. He could be an Andrew Wiggins in Golden State maybe one day to this point. Another guy who got some votes but did not make level four. But that's a big gap between baby Tim Duncan and Andrew Wiggins.
I have big dreams for Evan Mobley. I have big dreams for this project. We just finished level four. We will be back with more NBA levels. We hope you enjoy it. Don't forget to check out each NBA level at Yahoo Sports. And we'll be back on the Ball Don't Lie Network to discuss more of our NBA levels. Thanks to Jake again, man. That was a great. Next week, we're going to have Dan Devine join us for level three of NBA levels. We know y'all going to have a lot to say about that, so feel free to hit us up. For John Janelle, my producer extraordinaire, for Evan and Ron, who also work behind the glass and helping us out with the videos that you see on YouTube, on Instagram, on Twitter. Thank you, gentlemen. I am Vincent Goodwill. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Good Word. Don't forget, y'all, no cap room. Jake and Dan back later this week. NBA season is fantastic. We're back. Until then, y'all, be safe.